Which direction does north actually mean?
Can a hill be taller than a mountain?
And why do so many place names repeat themselves?
We've got tip-top topography terms and globs of global etymology facts as we take a globe-trotting geographical journey on Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of the book Useless Etymology. And today we're taking a spin around the globe with some geography terms.
Yes, we're covering our planet from pole to pole, looking at the origins of words for, I don't know, like geographical features, bits of the earth. Actually, that's where we should start, isn't it? With what the word geography literally means.
It means a description of the earth, right? That graphy bit means the process of writing, recording, drawing. It shows up in a bunch of words, of course. In this case, it is describing the earth.
Geo. Anything that's geo is earth-based. I mean, I have come with loads of terms for bits of the earth, as in, you know, when you look at the globe and there are labels on it, like poles, the north and the south pole. Why the heck are they called poles?
Presumably they're not a stripy stick at Santa's house.
Now, believe it or not, there isn't one. There isn't one. We've been there now and we know it's not there. So I don't know where Santa is hiding out. But it is more to do with that than you might think, or at least than I thought before I looked this up. Because I assumed that the magnetic nature of the poles is what means they are called poles. Yeah, you think, oh, you've got North and South Pole on a magnet, and therefore we call magnetic north and magnetic south the poles on the planet. But no, the word pole is used in Greek and in Latin first to refer to the extremities of an axis, so not to a magnet. The magnetic reference comes later than the reference to, well, we'll say the earth. I'm not 100% on how much the Romans knew about how lovely and globular our planet actually was.
Which, that's literally what that means, right? Globe means
yeah, it does.
Glob. Globe.
It's a glob.
And what's wild is, like, planet Earth, it didn't come to mean planet Earth until, like, the mid-1500s, which is surprising because, like, the Globe Theater was named not too long after that.
Yeah, isn't that bonkers? Earth is ground, essentially, you know, before it is a planet.
And Terra.
Yeah, yeah. And so the poles that I was referring to, the axis specifically, the poles are the ends of, so the poles are the ends of an axis, referred to the sort of the cosmos, you know, the rotating night sky, the axis around which that is happening, which does happen to be the axis of the earth, naturally. So poles are named after poles, almost more literally than you might have thought.
And these divide the earth into, well, northern and southern hemisphere, but we also have eastern and western hemispheres.
Yeah, which means we have an equator, which, what does that do? It breaks it up into equal parts.
Equally, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Equal hemis, halves.
Yeah. Rather more interesting than, I don't want to trash talk the equator, it's still interesting. But I think, etymologically speaking, the tropics are a little bit more interested, though, aren't they, Jess? We know about this. I don't think I really understood the tropics until I looked into the etymology of them, to be honest, because it is the key to sort of understanding their role in the cycle of the Earth. Because tropic comes from Greek tropos, right, which means to turn. And it's not about the fact that the Earth is turning, but what it's referring to is the fact that the tropics, so for example, the Tropic of Cancer, which is the northern one at, what, 23.4 degrees? At the solstice in June, so the summer solstice, that is the closest point to the sun. And then after that point, what the sun appears to do is turn back. So it's gone to its most southern point. Well, okay, point is, because I can't quite get that right, get my head around that. I'm very jet lagged still, Jess. I've just got back.
Visiting me.
Visiting you.
Totally understandable. But hey, you're globe-trotting, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. Connecticut's not quite tropical, but, you know, it's close enough. It's pretty exotic. So whichever it is, you've got the Cancer, you've got the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn. And the point is that the sun's position appears to start to reverse at the solstice. So the tropos, the tropikos, the turning is what happens at the solstice, which is the sort of reversing of direction of the sun.
So it means tropics means turning, or like a place of turning. And it's related to words like trope, which is fun. That's like a turn in a story, not necessarily, but it's sort of figurative. It's like a direction, of course, a fashion that we've applied to storytelling as well, something that recurs.
Yeah, or that fun early film thing used to have, which is like a spinny thing that had like a picture on the inside, usually a horse galloping. That was called a zoetrope, which meant a movement spin. The trope at the end meaning the rotation. Yeah, exactly.
In Latin, tropus meant a figure of speech, literally a turn of phrase, which is probably really where we get like the notion of a storytelling trope.
Oh.
Because it's recurring in the same way.
I do like that parallel between the literal turn of phrase and the Latin term. Isn't that spooky? I also had to look up the difference between longitude and latitude, because this is something that I've never managed to nail down for myself in my life, is how to remember which is longitude and which is latitude.
The mnemonic I always used was just long. Made more sense. I don't know, like...
Go on.
I don't know. I don't... It logicked in my head.
Yeah, I mean, it does make more sense, but go on. Tell me which is longitude and how you get there.
Longitude is... It's the, like, north to south, right?
Yeah, it
and
is,
then
yeah.
Latitude is... I don't know. It made sense in my head that long would be the tall part, and then lat would be the flat.
I don't. But no, I'm not. I mean, longer. My mnemonic is kind of similar, which is that the lines of longitude are longer than the lines of latitude.
That also helps.
Apart from the fact that the Earth is bulged, so the equator is longer than the lines of longitude. But otherwise, you know, you've got really rubbishy small lines of latitude up the top and down the bottom of the Earth. Forget those. So do you remember the longitude of the long ones, which are the ones that run from north to south? And then
yeah, so it felt like long is tall and lat is fat, right?
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Long is tall and lat is fat.
I think that was what I was, that was what I poorly explained a minute ago, but that's really it.
Are you jet lagged too?
No, not at all. I just forgot the logic.
By the way, if you did miss, we did an episode just last week in person. The first time Jess and I have actually met in person. It's well worth a watch. We went through 100 facts from our first 50 episodes. Why 100, Jess?
Because we hit 100,000 followers, and we have proof of that as well. This lovely YouTube play button.
What does it say on there, Jess?
It says, presented to Words Unraveled for surpassing 100,000 subscribers, for passing 100,000 subscribers. I can read.
But we have surpassed it as well. We're not still on 100,000. Yeah. So thank you very much if you are one of the people who has subscribed. We're really chuffed. If you're not, just do it now. Just join it. Everyone else is doing it.
Yeah.
I think we've digressed.
We should get back down to Earth a little bit.
Very good. The Earth being made up of continents, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
If you'd never thought about what continent literally means, it's funny. It means container. It's literally the same as container. Con, together. Tinent or tainer means held. Continents are areas that are held together.
This is a related term and not one geographically oriented necessarily, which we can talk about that word in a minute too. But incontinence, have you considered what that means? Unable to basically contain yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got that one. It's like you can't contain whatever it is that you're incontinent.
Well, the original meaning was like you can't contain your lustful urges, and then it became you can't contain your bowels.
Oh, really? So the original incontinence was sort of horniness?
Yes, it was. Unrestrained sexual desire.
I'm feeling quite incontinent tonight.
Oh, no, that could go very poorly.
Yes, it could. Especially if they didn't mean the other meaning.
Okay, back to under Earth again.
Continents, are ultimately made up of countries, which comes from the Latin contra, which refers to that. Well, you know what contra means. It means that which is opposite you. And really, that's kind of what the country is. It's the thing you look out upon that you are confronted with.
So the countryside is the earlier notion of country.
Yeah, based upon that, it is. Here's a really interesting one, though. The word landscape, that was a term for a painting before it was a term for what the painting is of.
Oh, how that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we borrow it from Dutch. It had the word landscape. It maybe still does, actually, Dutch. But landscape means literally land ship. That scarp at the end is the suffix ship that we have in words like lordship or friendship, stuff like that. And painters borrowed that Dutch word to refer to pictures of the countryside, of the landscape, of, well, yeah, of a landscape. But it's from that that we refer to what we see when we go out into the countryside, for example, as the landscape, not the other way around.
That scape and ship are also related to shape.
Ah, is that so?
Yeah, the ending ship means shaped, like, or shaping.
It's a thoroughly Germanic thing. German has Schaft, which means the same thing.
This isn't a direct connection or anything, but it feels like similarly surprising logic. I made a video the other day about the fact that there's a deer in the middle of the word wilderness. The der in wilderness is the word deer, wild deerness.
Wow. And is that...
It's not like wilderness, it's wild deerness.
Yeah, exactly.
And deer meaning animal.
That is a revelation.
Isn't it fun?
That's spectacular. Is that that old meaning of deer where it just means a general sort of beast, or where it means specifically the animal that it means now?
The Old English wildeoren meant pertaining to wild animals. And then the ness was added in Middle English to make it into a noun describing a place defined by the presence of wild animals.
That's brilliant. Yeah. For people who don't already know this, who don't follow Old English the way we do, yes, the word deer originally just meant a beast. It was a more general word for an animal, and we've made it specific.
The Old English words for deer were Heorot and Da, which is heart and doe.
Yeah, you know Heorot from Beowulf.
Beowulf.
The name of the hall.
Associated with stags, because royalty was associated with stags.
Oh, it's all just flowing out of us today. This is good. I should do this jet-lagged and just generally tired more often.
Ah, right? Let's talk about some different biomes that we find around the world, different types of landforms, different spaces that occupy continents and the ocean between them. Biome here basically being a noun form of the Greek bios, life.
When we were preparing for this and you said you'd been researching biomes, I immediately thought of microbiomes and I thought, well, you mean like gut bacteria?
Is true. It's like places where life is.
Yeah, a microbiome is a small one.
Right.
So where should we start?
We could start at the top of the world. We could start with mountains, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Mountain means something that rises above the earth. It's related to mount and eminent and menace, and a mountain implies something that is basically high up in the air.
All of these words have got sticky outy energy. They mean something that sticks out, right? Promontory as well is related to it. Prominent. Yeah, prominent is also related. And the words mount and mound are basically etymologically the same word.
We had an interesting pronunciation difference here. You said promontory. I would say promontory.
I'm actually not sure how to pronounce that.
Oh,
so
okay.
I've used various pronunciations down the years.
What if I'm wrong? That's also possible.
I don't know. I mean, I think you're probably right on this one. Rob incompetence is more likely than transatlantic difference.
Or just incompetence. I mean, the version you just said also puts more emphasis on the root of the word instead of on the prefix, so...
I may have been led to pronounce it like that by my research into, you know, the mountainousness of the promontory. What is it?
Promontory is how I would say it. But promontory. I might be wrong. So
let me look it up. Hold on.
Yeah.
Rather than have everyone go to the comments and tell one of us what a fool we are. Okay. Promontory.
Interesting. And I would just hit that O a little harder. And it does look like in American English, promontory.
Yeah, exactly.
Comes up a lot.
What did I say? I said promontory, didn't I? So I got the emphasis wrong. It's on the first syllable.
But you got the important emphasis right because you punched that morpheme.
Yeah, it was just to help. It was just to help explain the etymology.
That was the plan. But do you know the difference between, like, the geomorphological difference between a mountain and a hill?
Oh, no.
Neither does anyone else. So that's good. There's a distinction in, like, John Wittow's 1984 Dictionary of Physical Geography. He says a mountain is a landform that's at least 600 meters or 2,000 feet tall. But the OED also says in Great Britain, you would call something over 2,000 feet a mountain. Whereas in like India, 5,000 to 10,000 feet can be called hills, in contrast with the Himalayas, which can reach 20,000 feet. And the world's smallest mountain doesn't come anywhere near any of these. It is Mount, and I think it's pronounced Witchproof, but it might be Witchaproof. My Australian friends will have to tell me which one, because it is only 141 feet tall. That's 43 meters. So it's all relative to the surrounding terrain.
I'm not having that. is hill Germanic and mountain Romance?
Yeah, but that's not the only thing happening here. It's relative to how you feel about the height and variation of your landscape. Like if you're in the middle of Texas and something over there is a pile of rocks and it happens to be dramatically taller than everything else, it might be called Mount something or other.
Gotcha.
You are correct about the origins here, but that's also like not a super young word even in English.
Yeah, it's not very helpful. But sometimes we just have separate words for the same thing. One's come from one place and another's come from another. Another good one that we should talk about is forest, right? We have forest from the Latin languages, from French specifically, forêt. And we have wood, which would be the Germanic equivalent.
And forest is funny because it doesn't mean the word forest. It was short for forestum sylvum, meaning the outside woods. And sylvum, which is related to like sylvan, is the wood part. And it's outside because it's like a piece set aside by William the Conqueror in his Doomsday Book and things like that as royal hunting grounds.
Yeah, exactly. So they were hunting grounds originally. They didn't even have to have a load of trees in them necessarily. And that forest from Latin, which means outside, is also related to the word foreign, which is what we use to refer to an outsider.
And that's the distinction between like a forest and a woodland. The woodland is, the poor can use it too.
Yeah. And by definition, it's got trees made of wood in it.
We did a lot more on that. We had a whole section or a whole episode on woodland words in an earlier season. So we've got a bunch of like animals and things that live there as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that one.
How about the difference between a rainforest and a jungle? That's a cool one.
Oh, gosh. So it's either got something to do, I'm just guessing here, something to do with microclimate or where it is.
Yeah, kind of, but also no.
Neither. Great.
The term rainforest is a modern term, first appearing in ecological literature in the early 1900s, and it became the preferred term for this biome in scientific usage. Jungle is adopted from Hindi, and it meant in Hindi any wilderness, any uncultivated land, ultimately from Sanskrit, which the Sanskrit predecessor to this described dry and arid terrain. So it was originally any wilderness. And then because English speakers observed dense forest in Hindi speaking areas, it became a word for a dense forest, which was then applied to like the Amazon later and things like that, which now we term a rainforest.
How interesting that it could also mean an arid area.
There's some cool things going on with wilderness too. I mentioned that it's like it was originally a word for an area with a lot of animals in it, but that wasn't always the case. Shortly thereafter, it was applied in the Latin Vulgate. It was translated using the Latin term desertum. Later, Samuel Johnson's dictionary would also define a wilderness as a desert, meaning it's deserted of people, not of wildlife. So like there's some schmooginess around there. And that also appears in jungle versus jungle.
That is what desert means, by the way. We should point this out. It doesn't mean sandy place. It means place without anyone in it, doesn't it? And I think I've always had in my head the idea of a desert island being an island, a sandy island, but it's not, is it? It's the intended meaning of that phrase, desert island, is an island that is deserted.
Right. And the zert in desert means like forsaken, or it means joined together. So to put the D on the front means to forsake a place specifically by people. You see wilderness and desert used semi-interchangeably in versions of the Bible that talk about like not just Jesus, but was it Paul who goes off into the wilderness? One of them becomes forest man and eats bees and whatnot. He doesn't eat bees. He eats honey. I don't know my biblical lore.
Bee eating part of the Bible. I mean, there's a lot in the Bible. Maybe there is a bee eating bit. I don't know.
No, he just eats honey. I am pretty sure it's Paul.
Actually, you mentioned that Latin deserere, right? Which is where dessert comes from. Deserere, which is to unconjoin, basically. But the serere there is also related to our word series. So when you desert something, you take it out of a series. You take it away from, yeah, it's cohort.
That's very cool.
Another word that means desert is Sahara, by the way. Sahara desert means desert. And there are a lot of these tautologous geographical terms, aren't there?
Yes, they're called either pleonasms or tautologies. The distinction is very narrow, but pleonasm is used more in linguistic contexts, and tautology also has applications in math and other disciplines. The slight distinction is that pleonasms don't sound wrong, whereas tautologies sometimes do sound more wrong, like saying ATM machine sounds more repetitive if you know what ATM stands for, whereas Sahara Desert means desert, but Sahara is also the name of the desert, so it doesn't sound as wrong. Plus, like, we also forget that the indigenous terms that these names came from meant that in the first place.
Yeah, indeed. Like, we've got River Avon lots of River Avons, and Avon's just from the old Celtic word for river as well. And ooze, actually, we have lots of river oozes in England as well. And ooze was just the Viking word for a river as well.
Mississippi River is the Great River from an Ojibwe term. Lake Tahoe is lake. And then Mount Mauna Kea, which is, I mean, I would just say Mauna Kea because I don't know, I consider Mauna to mean mountain, but I have also seen it written Mount Mauna Kea. So I don't know. Anyway, that's the tallest mountain in the world from base to tip, by the way, not from elevation wise.
So it starts off really low down.
Right. So it's the biggest mountain, but it's lower down.
So if you were to climb from bottom to top, you would ascend higher.
Farther than
Everest.
Everest, which is the, yeah.
And no one would care though. That's the problem.
Yeah, right.
It might be a bit quieter up there than at the top of Everest though. I don't know.
We were on the topic of deserts, and not a desert, but a grassland and or more scrubland type territory would be the savanna, which has a really cool origin. Whether you spell it savanna with an H or without an H, both are variants on the Spanish sabana, meaning treeless plain, which in turn comes from a Taino word, zabana. It's a Caribbean term repurposed for an African biome by way of European comparisons.
This is the thing that I found so amazing when I looked up the same word, learning about the Carib languages, by the way, that preceded the Spanish arriving there was very interesting. But also to know that that word comes from that side of the Atlantic when I entirely associate it with Africa is amazing. But you have terms like savanna grass and stuff in the Americas as well, which are used not in reference to Africa, for example, right?
And we also have, if you want the perhaps more enchanting term Serengeti, you get an indigenous African term, which means endless plain in the Ma language of the Maasai.
Treeless plain is what savanna means, right? Which is also what steppe means, which is a word that we get from Russian, which is something like steppe. Interesting thing that's going on there. So the Spanish are getting to come up with the word savanna because they're the explorers that encounter this word. The steppes are basically mostly located around Russia, so we use a Russian word for that. And then in North America, you have the prairies, which essentially means something very similar. But the French were there and got the opportunity to name them, and we used, of course, they had names in existing languages in those areas, but those are the words that have ended up in English based upon the people that the English are hanging out with, I guess.
Another Russian one is the taiga, which is basically a boreal forest, and boreal here, like the aurora borealis, means northern. But taiga, which is just the Russian word for that type of landscape, and might have like a Turkic or Mongolic source originally, it's actually the largest terrestrial biome on the planet, and it has these coniferous species. It can have kind of squishy ground, or it can have more dry ground. The trees there have needle-like leaves because they need to conserve water and survive these low temperatures and acidic soils. But it also has like fires and permafrost and things like that.
That sounds like a really good quiz question to have in your back pocket, the largest biome on the planet.
Largest terrestrial biome because the ocean.
Yeah. Good shout. Largest terrestrial biome. You mentioned squidgy ground. Another thing I learned while researching this was the origin of swamp, which essentially means something squidgy.
Right.
Like in Germany, where I am sitting, the word Schwarm, directly related to our word swamp, means, well, it can mean a mushroom, but it can also mean a sponge. And actually, when I used to go to makeup when I worked in the telly, they would use what they called a Schwämmchen, which means a little sponge, just to, you know, dab the many imperfections on my face. But that was a revelation for me.
Swipe your face with a swamp.
Yeah, swipe my face with a mini swamp.
It's also related to the word sump, as in sump pump, which is a surprisingly old word. Like, I thought that was like a thing we invented more recently. But no, we've had the word sump since the mid-1500s, and it was originally a word for a marsh. The pit to collect water dates back to like 1650. I guess dealing with sludge is a recurring and old human problem.
Yeah, and particularly, you know, a language that formed in Britain definitely dealt with a fair bit of sludge.
Yeah, that would make sense. We've got other words like marsh, which is an old English word for a wetland, and then bog, which is an Irish word for a wetland.
Okay, so that's why we've got those two words that are so similar.
A bog is, like, ecologically, it is a rain-fed acidic wetland with low rates of decomposition and slow water flow. So you have peat there often.
Right, and that's why you get bog bodies pulled out of these peat bogs, because they get nicely preserved.
There's also a fen, which is an old English word for marsh. You have a lot of words for that. There's also...
I told you, we've got a lot of soggyness.
You sure do. And then you have mire. This one's an old Norse word for marsh.
They came over and went, oh, it's very wet here. I reckon they need another word for it.
Oddly enough, the more recent one of these is the most recent one of these is wetland, which is like an 18th century compound. Obviously, wet and land are older.
You could well imagine the Anglo-Saxons coming up with the term wetland to describe it, couldn't you? So it's a very literal description.
You might have, since we're on the topic of water, you might have a river nearby. It's from the Latin riparia, which meant river bank, while flumen and amnus described the water itself.
Oh.
So the word riparian pertains to rivers and streams, but also originally in Latin to riverbanks.
So river doesn't mean flowing water.
Right. It's not the water, it's the bank.
They've missed the point. We've missed the point. But that does explain why French has the word rivière and it has fleuve. And it can be very difficult to differentiate between what is a rivière, as in not riviera, but rivière, river, and what is a fleuve in French. I think one's bigger than the other. Tell me in the comments if you can explain it.
That would make sense to me.
And then in French, you've got the rive gauche, which refers to the left bank of the river Seine in Paris. So yeah, that means left bank. That's that rive related to that Latin word.
We were just laughing about the fact that a river is not named for the water, but none of these are named for the water. They're all named for the landform. A lake is from the Latin lacus, meaning basin or reservoir, but the notion is like the space in which the water lives, and then pond is related to like pound as an impound. So it is the enclosure in which the water lives.
So are they both from Latin, those terms, lake and pond?
Pond is from Old English. It's a Germanic word. Lake is a Latin word.
And then you've also got like sea as well, which is actually supposed to be an enclosed area of water rather than, you know, the ocean. Although in Britain, we like to use sea instead of the word ocean. And in America, you like to use the word ocean a bit more often than we do. But a sea is a closed off area. And actually in German, a sea, well, you can have like the Nordsee, which is the North Sea, but also a sea can just be a lake.
So the word ocean comes from the Latin Okeanos, I think, and then it's borrowed from the Greek word, which is Okeanos, the name for both the world-encircling river in early Greek cosmology and for the god who personified it. In Homeric Greek, Okeanos ringed the flat disk of the world and served as a source of all rivers and clouds and rain, and was imagined less as like a big open blue than sort of a circumference.
Yeah, so to the Greeks, the ocean was a river.
A big world-encircling river.
So Jess, I've been looking up the origins of north, south, east, and west, and they're just way more interesting than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah.
But you take these words for granted. They're just north means north, and south means south. East means east, west means west.
Right, it feels fundamental.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And they're just, like these are just words that have just been created to refer to the points on a compass, but they're not. They each have ancient roots that have a literal meaning. I think the most surprising one is that north has an ancient root meaning left.
What? Why?
So as in a lot of cultures, the directions are not based upon, so our maps have really messed with our heads on this, with north being up at the top. But generally in the past, people have orientated themselves. And I reckon you're going to tell us about the word orientate at some point. They've orientated themselves based upon the rising sun. If you are looking at the rising sun, then the north is on your left because you are looking east.
Ta-da! Fascinating. Cool, so that like the word itself is a compass.
There you go. Yeah, it is. And south, conversely, means sun. It has the same root as the word sun. So
for the same reason.
Exactly. So if you're looking, so that's because in the northern hemisphere, the sun is south, right? All the time, it's south of you.
The other two also pertain to the sun, right?
They pertain to similar ideas. So east has an ancient root that means to become light, because that is where the sun rises, right? And it actually is related to the Sanskrit word ushas, which means the dawn, which you can kind of see. And it's actually related to the word aurora as well. And in a very confusing way, it's related to the Latin australis.
Like Austria and Australia.
Exactly. But what does australis mean? It doesn't mean eastern, does it? It means southern. And etymologists have pondered how this could have gone from meaning east to south. And one of the best explanations they've come to is that the Romans were a bit confused about the orientation of the Italian peninsula, the boot of Italy, right? Which they appear to have thought just sort of pointed down like a boot does. But if you look at a map, you'll see that Italy actually isn't like that. It's not perfectly vertical. It's at an angle like that. So they may have been just a bit sort of confused between their souths and their easts. And that's how you end up with a word that originally meant east coming to mean south.
Amazing.
And then west means evening. It has an ancient root meaning evening, and it's related to the Latin word for evening, which is vespera, which obviously makes sense because that is where the sun sets. A really nice additional word that's not related to any of these for the west is the Irish and the Scottish Gaelic. Now, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but I think it's Shar. It's S-I-A-R, which means both westward, but it also means behind you. And that's because, again, people are orientating themselves based upon the rising of the sun. So I just found that a bit more interesting, and it's made me think all of our maps are wrong, and those old maps where they're the other way around because they've got Jerusalem at the top were just maybe making a bit more sense, perhaps.
Was the word west altered to reflect the spelling of east?
I don't think it was, because the ancient root is wes, W-E-S. So that suggests to me not, but the English word for east is a bit unusual for Germanic words, because a lot of them are more like ost instead. But we have this E sound.
So it's a cognate with the Latin word, not from it, which makes perfect sense chronologically.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Another really surprising point for you. The French and Spanish and Italian and Portuguese words for north, south, east, and west. So in French, that is nord, sud, west, and est all come from English.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
They're borrowed that's really from English. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't think of fundamental words going from English into French. You think of it going the other way around.
The only other one that comes to mind immediately is dog, you know?
Yeah. And that happens way, way, way later, you know? But their words for, so they get borrowed into French from English first, and then they go into Spanish. The Spanish words for the compass points are essentially borrowings of the French words, which are borrowings of the English words, which is, I don't know, kind of amazing, because we know that Latin had completely different words for the points of the compass, for north, south, east, and west.
You mentioned Vesper as west. It's also like a
evening.
Evening. And then it's also Venus, like the planet Venus, because it rises from the west. Is that right? Again, I'm doing this from memory, but Vesper was used in Middle English as a word for the evening star. It has a lot of names, and Venus seen at evening.
The Latin for north, so we think of the Aurora Borealis, and yes, you have Borealis, which is a later Latin term meaning northern. So Aurora Borealis are the northern lights. But there was a more normal classical Latin word for the north, which was septentriones. And septentriones means seven plough. Just have a think about this. Seven plough. What could that be referring to? So I know in Britain, I don't know if you do it in America, but we refer to Ursa Major, the constellation, as the plough. But I think it gets referred to as the Big Dipper elsewhere.
Huh, yeah.
And the Latin word for the north refers to the constellation of Ursa Major, which points to the North Star.
I mean, it might be worth mentioning or re-mentioning, since I think we've addressed this before, that Arctic and Antarctic mean with bears and without bears because of the constellation.
Yeah.
But also it's nice. It's nicely serendipitous because there are polar bears at the North Pole and not at the South Pole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the bear and against the bear. Yeah. And then the other Latin ones that we should mention are like, so we talk about the Orient, and that's coming from the Latin for east, and Occident is from the Latin for the west.
Right. To be disoriented is to be unable to determine where you are, but literally not to know which way east is.
Yeah, to be dis-easted.
Which means if you're disoriented, you're also disoccidented.
Oh, yeah.
Presumably.
Yeah. Completely. You're disaustralated as well.
I love it. You said disorientated earlier and orientated. And I typically, more typically hear oriented and disoriented.
Yeah, this is a real sore point, actually, I've discovered in the past. Because, yeah, in Britain, we say disorientated. I'm feeling disorientated.
I think there are regional differences within the US, too, because I've heard people say disorientate here, too.
Oh, really? Okay. I've definitely heard Americans preferring disorient. It's not actually that these are variations on the same word. They have minutely different meanings, but meanings that are so close together that you can use them exactly the same. So you're either, okay, let me see if I can get this out. I've looked at it before, I haven't prepared myself for it. But to disorientate, right, is to sort of un-eastify yourself, as if you've been east. So you have orientated. You have worked out where east is, and now you're not. Whereas to disorient is to uneast yourself, which is basic. This is so minute, this difference.
So you may not have ever been easted in the first
exactly.
place.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I mean, one of the reasons we have tate and not tate is because orientate is a back formation of orientation, and orient was later back formed again as a verb.
And we do tend to think of back formations as being lesser than original words, which is it's a mark against disorientate versus disorient. But I'm going to continue saying disorientated, even if it's more of a mouthful.
Well, this has been a lovely globe-trotting journey. Should we bring it to a close?
Yeah, because I'm already feeling disorientated by my own explanation of disorientate. And also, I don't know what time of day. I'm actually disorientated by air travel.
Well, go get some rest and we'll return next week with more etymology facts on a different topic.
Take care, guys.